Hi, welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Chris Reisner, and today I'm joined by my assistant, Nick Harris.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Nick. And today our special guest is Andrew Edwards. Andrew, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Andrew Edwards from the Microsoft Azure Storage team.
Great. And what are you going to talk about today?
Today, I'm going to give a brief overview of the storage service we provide for Azure, and then go into the Microsoft Azure file service and talk about that and demonstrate a little bit.
Fantastic.
So the file service is actually a net new service, not to be confused with blobs and that kind of thing.
It's another front end that we've built on top of Azure Storage. So we have blobs, tables, queues, disks, and now files.
Okay, and what's its basic purpose? Just for the people that know about storage and are thinking, am I going to turn this off now, or am I going to watch till I see this new stuff?
So the idea is that the best part about it is that you can take a VM running in a data center, and you can just net use to our storage service now and connect to it just like you would read and write regular files on an SMB share that you would have on-premise, just like you're used to using. So your application, your VM, your whatever it is that you're running, can just read and write those files using standard Windows APIs.
Okay.
So.
Excellent. Well, there it is.
So we'll back up a little bit, and I'll tell you a little bit about Windows Azure Storage, and then we can jump into the file specific stuff.
Excellent. Let's get started.
So Azure Storage is this large distributed system that supports storing lots of data. And as I said, mentioned a few moments ago, we have lots of different abstractions now. We have blobs, disks, tables, queues, and now files. It's a highly durable, available, and massively scalable storage service that lets you store all of your data in a resilient way. And you just have to pay for what you use. You don't have to pay for you don't have to go buy the disks yourselves, essentially. And we expose it through lots of different APIs, through REST APIs, client libraries, tools, and now, of course, the SMB interface as well.
Okay.
So I can talk a little bit about blobs and disks. So blobs is this chunk of data that you store in the cloud, and we have an interface to read and write that through the REST interface. So that's like a HTTP. You can put some data, and then you can get it back. Of course, you can delete it and do other things, too. And it's designed for these large-scale applications that have lots and lots and lots of data, and they want to be able to read and write it from pretty much anywhere in the world.
Okay.
And, of course, things like backups of other data can be done through that as well.
And this also includes geo-replication, which you can basically turn on automatically. You don't have to, basically you just click a box and it geo-replicates for you.
Yes, yep. So blobs, actually all of our storage services do geo-replication worldwide, so that when you save it to one data center and then we save it to some other data center some number of hundreds of miles away, so we can protect you from large-scale disasters and things like that.
Perfect.
So disks are what we use for IaaS VMs today. So when you create a virtual machine, a persistent virtual machine in Windows or Microsoft Azure, that the disks that you get, the OS disk and any data disk you add, are backed by our storage system. So when you write your data, it's written to a couple of copies within our data center, so that we can keep that up all the time for you. And that's, of course, stored, and it's backed by blobs as well. So you can upload your VHD when you want to create a new VM to the blob storage, and then do some magic and make that happen and turn into a VM.
Great.
We also have tables, which is our massively scalable NoSQL store. So it's just a key value lookup that lets you store tons and tons of different keys and values. It doesn't support all the fancy queries that you could get from a true SQL database, but you can do lots of things, most of the things that you'd want to be able to do just through this simple key-value pair.
And it's much less expensive than doing a true SQL.
It's much less expensive because you don't have to have all the complexity that we have to build behind that. And then we have queues as well, which is a reliable messaging system that you can use to build these decoupled components within your application. So you can put something into a queue from one role and then have another one pull it out, and it handles or helps you handle these asynchronous connections between the two. And of course, files is our last one, which is why I'm here today. Mm-hmm. And so we'll talk about that for the rest of the time here. So files is very similar to blobs, but there's a bunch of differences we had to make in order to make it act like something that people are used to using through these file interfaces. And I'll go through some of the differences. The point of it is it makes it easier to take applications that are running on-premise that already are used to having a file share, and it allows us to move those into the cloud, and they can still use our file share rather than the one that they were using on-premise. In addition, we we supply this REST interface to files just like we do for blobs. So you can still do a put and a get the same way and read your data that's stored in this file share. So you, that's accessible worldwide from any internet connected device.
Is it support the whole secure access signature that you used to get with blobs and table storage?
We don't yet have the secure the SAS available, but eventually we will as well. So today, the authentication has to be through the full authentication mechanism we use with the storage keys. And we'll have a little demo of how that works a little bit later. In addition, we have a bunch of other things that we're adding onto the storage services as well. So one is this import-export service that allows you to ship us a disk with your data on it, and then we will suck the data off of that disk and put it into the storage service. So if you don't have a big network pipe and you have lots of data to transfer to us, this is one way you can go about doing that. And then we, of course, have all these tools and libraries I mentioned as well. So we have a REST interface, and then on top of that, we build a bunch of client libraries. So you can, if you're writing code in .NET or in Java, you can interact with our service without having to write a bunch of glue code, essentially.
Mm. So the import-export service recently GA'd a month or 2 months ago or something, right? Because previously, you're only allowed to ship disks within the US, but now we've sort of opened that up so you can ship disks to...
Yes.
All of our data centers?
Yeah. So the import-export service GA'd at the same time we shipped Azure Files.
Okay.
And yeah, it allows you now to import or export data from anywhere, any of our data centers worldwide. Yeah.
So for all those people that were asking me questions about when it's available, it's now
it's available.
Now the next time you're in Australia, you can get all those floppy disks you got at home and just send them right over.
Almost. So yeah, we have some requirements about the format of the disks and what needs to be on them and things like that. They have to be BitLocker encrypted because we need to make sure that nobody steals your data on the way to the data center. So there's lots of details, but it is possible now to ship something from Australia to a data center.
And tape drive happen. Support it?
We don't have tape support. Okay. So yeah, it's actually just bare SATA drives.
Okay.
The large ones, not the small ones right now.
Okay.
So it's fairly limited in terms of the number of different devices we support, but it usually gets the job done.
Yep.
Great.
So when we were talking, I mean, actually over the last couple of years, we've been talking to lots of customers and asking them, you know, what do you want? And oftentimes it's even unsolicited. They're like, I wish I could just go create a drive somewhere and I could access it from all of my virtual machines through a UNC path or something like that. And so people have been saying this over and over again, and we've been saying, we wish we could give that to you too. and we've been working on it for a while, a couple of years, so we finally have this available now. This is Azure Files. So the idea is you can have a VM or a bunch of VMs, and you create this file share, and they can connect to it through the SMB interface, and they can read and write files just like they were doing, you know, to the local disk, except it's shared. So one VM can write the file, and the other one can see it, and they can even both open the file at the same time if they use the right permissions on the magic create file APIs. And one can be writing it, and one can be reading it all at the same time. So there's lots and lots of scenarios this opens up. A couple of the scenarios here, and this is just some examples that we came up with when we were thinking about it. And the first one I talked about just now is the sharing data across multiple VMs and applications, where they can use the standard file system semantics that the applications were originally designed with, and now they can communicate with each other just right through that. Some other ideas that we came up with. So, like, one of the problems or one of the challenges we have with our service is we have data centers worldwide, and each data center has lots of different instances of our service running in it. And now, when we want to go make a settings change on one of them, we have to go, or on all of them, we have to go to each one, right, and populate this sort of settings around. And we do that all the time. And when you're building your own service now with the Azure Files, right, you can put your settings on a share, right? And all of these VMs can just be watching it and looking at it periodically and checking, oh, it changed. Okay, I'll go reread my settings. So making a configuration change is much, much easier now because you can just put this in a central location.
And of course, if we make a problem with one of the settings files, then we can take out everything at once.
You need to be a little bit careful with, So when you build a service or an application, you do have to think about how you roll those through or whatever. And so you there's lots of ways to build those sort of incremental services where you make a small change that only affects 1% or whatever like that. Anyway, you can do that sort of thing, but you can use the file share as a central location to help you do that.
Very useful.
Yeah. And then the other one, which I'll do in the demo here a little bit, is for dev test debugs. So you can set up a file share and put your, you know, your debuggers and your tools and utilities and things like that on it. And if you're ever inside of a VM and you need your tools, now you just net use connect to that share, and you can access your tools that you need right then and there. So I think very helpful.
I wish you had this in about October last year. So I was trying to build a solution, and I wanted to essentially have, say, and this sort of talks to the lift and shift scenario, which you talked about before. Mm-hmm. I wanted to have a scenario where I'm using, say, Sync framework, and that enables batching, right? Mm-hmm. And that batch is generally written to a local disk or to a share. And so the problem that I had was this all works well on-prem.
Oh, yeah.
If I want to put it in Azure, I want to take advantage of Azure's ability to scale out my compute tier. Mm-hmm. But to do that, I needed a network share.
Yep.
And so I was looking at all the ways to do it, and it just looked like it was going to take me like 3-4 days to try and hack something together that would sort of make something work. But I essentially was going to rewrite the file provider to write directly to storage instead of, you know, to a network share.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was just, you know, too much. So I think for many people who have scenarios, you know, legacy, maybe not legacy, or something running on-prem, and they've been considering using Azure, they've had sort of a network share type constraint, that goes away, and basically you can now just pull it straight up.
Yeah, so we're going to save everybody 4 days.
Yes, or more.
Quite a bit more, I think. 4 days to do the development, but for a production service, that's a lot of testing and other development and things like that that goes into that. So yeah, it saves quite a bit of work. Potentially. So so one thing we want to stress is today we're only supporting the SMB 2.1 protocol. There's a newer SMB 3.0 protocol that's server 2012 and 2012 R2 support. We wanted to make sure we covered everybody in the first version that's running in the cloud. So we have server 2008 doesn't support SMB 3.0, and neither does a lot of the Linux distributions. So
so we
picked 2.1 for now, and we'll, moving forward, of course, we'll keep trying to keep up with all the new protocols as they come out, or new versions of the protocols. So SMB 2.1, because we support that, it supports all of the Windows file APIs that you're used to, like create file and read file, but also all of the libraries that are wrapped around that. So the C runtimes have versions of them, and .NET has versions of them, and all of those just work, and Java and Perl and PHP, and anything, all of these things can just read and write files now directly to these file shares. Pretty.
Is there anything we should be like? That's awesome because your code just works. Is there anything we need to be aware of in terms of differences between this and perhaps what you'd have on prem in terms of throughput or anything like that?
Yeah. So an on prem file share is going to vary pretty dramatically in terms of throughput and latency because you don't really know what's behind and running it and how many people are using it and all that stuff. So we actually are fairly similar in that. We have a similar system where it's a shared with lots of users, and, and people are reading, writing to it all the time. So in some ways, we actually probably are a subset of what you'd see on-premise. You could certainly imagine somebody on-premise building a giant SMB server or something like that, and having lower latencies and higher throughputs and things like that. So we're not going to be, you know, the high end, but but we should give a broad, common interface that most people can use for most applications. So
do we have any statistics published around, you know, transactions per second or anything like that?
Yeah, so just like the storage service, we have sort of what we publish upper bounds on what we expect to be able to get. And so those are later in my slides.
Okay, sorry.
No, that's fine. I'm tempted to just jump forward to them and show you them, but if I do that, then I'll forget all the other slides.
Let's continue.
So we'll just keep going on through. So the other thing we mentioned was the REST APIs. So this allows you to connect to your files. This is something you don't get on-premise. You don't have your files on your SMB share aren't available on the web with the proper authentication to allow you to access it. So this actually opens up some neat scenarios as well. So if you have like that settings file, that you put into your file share and all these VMs are connecting to it, now you can use REST from somewhere else, from your phone or something like that, to actually configure your site. Right, so I can just imagine myself out sitting on a boat on one of our beautiful lakes out here and working on my phone and changing config. Oh, I just got to fix that config. Oh, we're all good. Back to water skiing. So, so that's pretty cool as well. Probably a little extreme in that case of my description, but anyway. So yeah, you can do a lot of the things that you would want to be able to do through the SMB interface. You can also do through REST, like creating files, deleting files, all that sort of stuff. So anyway, it's a pretty powerful thing that we don't have on-premise today. And I talked about the storage architecture a little bit, and you asked a question earlier on, and I almost wanted to flip to this slide too. But basically what we have in our storage service is we have a multi-layered system where we have at the bottom this distributed replication layer, which is the thing that makes all the copies of your data and makes sure they're always there. And we scrub them constantly to make sure that, that all your data is correct and everything like that. And then on top of that, we have what we call our indexing layer. That does all the load balancing and manages the scale out of the service. And that's like the key value type lookups. And then on top of that, we've glued all these different services. So the blob and disk front end, the table front end, the queue front end. Okay. And then today we have the file share front end as well. Mm-hmm. So the interesting thing is this one now has a different protocol. All the other ones were REST, and now we've added this SMB protocol to support connecting from virtual machines to our service as well.
All right.
So here's the differences. Here's what you were asking earlier about the different throughputs and things like that. There's a lot of details on this
Couldn't
slide.
Couldn't you just remember that, all of those?
All those numbers, yeah, yeah. I probably could have, but I didn't want it to prove. Anyway, I live these numbers all the time. So, so I'm not going to go through each of the lines in here because there's a lot of details, but just I'll jump to the things that you were most interested in. So the throughput number for blobs today, we say a blob can do up to 60 megabytes per second per blob. And today for files, we're saying it's about 60 megabytes per share at this point. So there's sort of a limitation in terms of a difference there. Blobs scale much better than files do. So today, if you want to, you know, scale your application up to have hundreds of megabytes per second, you just create lots of blobs. For files, if you really wanted to do that, you'd have to create lots of shares, which adds some complexity to your application and things like that. Okay. So it's not really meant at this point for these sort of high throughputs, highly scalable applications. It's more for the, you know, your install scripts and your things like that that don't have a high throughput requirement, or it's intended for things that you can do caching. The SMB clients that run in Windows will do caching for you. So each, if you have lots of scale-out VMs and they're all accessing a lot of files, they'll cache them locally. So you won't have to read the data from us all the time.
Okay. So the 60 meg per share. If we wanted to put 10 shares in the one storage account, is there going to be any sort of cap that the actual storage account is constraining us there?
I don't have the numbers for the storage accounts here, but and they vary by region and by type of geo replication you have turned on. But they are documented on MSDN and on our blog as well for the Azure storage team.
And we'll include links to both of those at the bottom of the video.
There are limits to how high you can scale both blobs and files. In fact.
Okay.
So there are some other differences. A couple of them that the blobs today are case sensitive names.
Right.
So when you connect to them, it's like that's sort of a standard for HTTP, that everything be case sensitive. But the SMB shares typically are case insensitive but case preserving, and that's kind of the way that Windows works its file system. So Azure Files is also case insensitive, case preserving to try to be compatible. With all of these things. So it's a little bit different there.
Could you explain the case preserving part?
So case preserving means that when I go and create a file name, if I use all capital letters, that then when I do dir, I'll see all capitals.
Right.
But if I try to open the file and I use all little letters, it'll still open it.
Okay.
It'll remember the original capitalization when the file was first created and then allow you to see that later. So.
Okay.
Another difference is the file service actually has true directory objects, whereas the blob service has these sort of pseudo directory things. So when you're doing a listing in blobs, you can pass us in a separator character, and we will use that like it's a directory and sort of limit you to this set of files or blobs. But in Azure Files, they're true directory objects. So you can, when you do a list, you can only see things within that directory because it's sort of like a hierarchical tree rather than what we call a flat namespace. And the rest of this I've already talked about a little bit, so I think we'll just move on. So we also have a slide to compare IaaS persistent disks with Azure Files. And the important parts here probably gets back is again performance related things. So the IOPS is probably the most important, and the megabytes per second. So a disk today we limit to 500 IOPS.
Right.
So regardless of how small your operations are, you can only go up to 500 IOPS per disk. Yeah. Azure Files shares we're actually allowing you to go up to 1,000. So you get a little more than a disk, but not more than two.
So on the on the max size there, the 1 terabyte disk, you can stripe disks though, right?
Yes, yeah. So you can create up to 16 disks on the largest size VM, so you can have a 16 terabyte disk. Yeah. Our file shares are only allowed to be up to 5 terabytes per share. So you can sort of do the same. You could kind of do the same thing. You could create multiple shares and spread your data across them if you had more than 5 terabytes of data.
Yeah. You may be able to store all your selfies in there now.
I've got quite a few.
That's a lot of selfies. anyway, so yeah, and the other limitation, we still have this 1 terabyte per file limit as well. Okay. So most people don't have files that are larger than a terabyte, though. So that would be a very big selfie. It'd be a very impressive picture to look at.
I've got to get to work. I'll be back.
Yeah, that's going to need a lot of cameras for that one. Anyway, so there's some other details here, but... these are actually, this same table is actually on MSDand as well, so people can go and find it if they want to read up on this later. And, so client OS support, we, like I mentioned earlier, Server 2012 and Server 2008 R2 are supported, and those are the most of the Windows images that are running in Azure today. Okay. I think all the Windows images are that. There's also some support for Linux as well, and it's the way Linux is supported. It's hard to say support. it seems to work. We've played around with a little bit. Ubuntu seems to work. The other distros aren't, at least when we tried them, weren't working yet. And I've seen some emails going around from outside the company that there's some work being done to make that work.
Is that mostly based off just the actual Linux distro support for SMB?
Yeah, SMB 2.1. Right, yeah. So some of it's interesting. Some of the code is available in all of the kernels, but it's not turned on, that sort of thing. So it's just a matter of getting it all turned on and configured correctly. And some people might be able to do that themselves or have to have somebody else do it for them. I'm not really certain. I don't know too much about that. But it does work when we played around with it. So.
Okay.
So this is my slide that shows what we're going to do for our demo. So basically, we're going to set up a couple of VMs, and we're going to have them running a little website. I'm going to do a PHP website in this case, because I found it's really easy to get that one going. And they're both going to connect to an SMB share for reading some of the content. Actually, I'm going to put a PHP script right on the share, and they're going to actually jump or call into it.
Okay.
So I'll set this up, and I'm going to do it all through PowerShell.
Okay.
Which it's not a very visual demo. You can do the same thing through through the portal or whatnot. But, this will be fun.
Okay.
I'm going to type this all in, too, as I go. So I've already gone. I'm using what I would call a development VM. So I've gone and created from the portal and made my own virtual machine. And I went and installed the Azure PowerShell commandlets and modules or whatever. And I've got that all up and ready, so I can just jump in and start playing. The first thing you have to do, and I'm going to skip this step too, is you have to add your Azure account and connect this PowerShell script up to your Azure account. So you type add Azure account with a hyphen in the right place, and it pops up and asks you for your username and password, and you type that in, and then it says, oh, I'm connected. My particular Azure account actually has multiple subscriptions in it, so I need to make sure I get the right one because I don't want to go install my VMs in somebody else's subscription that I'm only supposed to be watching. So I can create this here, and my subscription happens to be called Red Dog.
Okay.
I wonder why. So now I've got that connected up to the right one so that I can make sure I create it there. And so now one of the requirements for Azure Files is that you have to first register for the preview for Azure Files on the portal and then get approved, which is pretty quick now. And then you have to create a new storage account because old storage accounts don't have Azure Files enabled by default.
Right.
So,
and when you say new, is that any storage account post announcement of the feature?
New storage account since you registered for preview.
Right.
Since you got approved for the preview, actually. So yeah, you have to only once your account has been approved. Your subscription has been approved for the preview, will the new account have the file endpoint?
Okay.
So I type new storage account and I have to give it a name. Andred's my email alias. I'm gonna put CC for cloud cover. And then I want to make sure that this lands in the same location that I'm going to create these VMs in. So I'm actually going to go type South Central. US here. So create a storage account in South Central US.
So is there a constraint there that needs to be in the same geo region?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So your VM and your storage account for SMB need to be within the same region in order to talk to each other.
I don't know why you'd want to do it otherwise. But,
For a website, it wouldn't make sense. But there are some scenarios where it might be nice to have one that's sort of available in more than one location. But for now, it's all within one location. Okay. So. And we're going to have to talk and keep ourselves busy while this goes and creates it. So it's going and creating my storage account, and it's registering DNS names and doing all this other stuff. Oh, it's already done.
There you go. Pretty
fast. It was pretty fast, yeah. I was. It's kind of always risky when you do something live. So
remember that good, Chris. We need that.
The operation ID?
I'll write it down.
Actually, what we're going to need now is the storage account key for the rest of it. So in order to hook it up, I'm going to need to get that out. So there's actually a PowerShell command to do that. Get Azure, I have them all written down here, so storage key. Let's see if I spelled that right. Yeah, get Azure storage key, and then you need to use the account name I created, Android CC. And it will actually print out the storage key right to the screen.
So we'll write that one down.
That's the one you want to write down, because now you have access to my storage account.
Now I know where to put the selfies.
I'm going to yes, that's where you should put your selfies. Until I delete the account, then you'll be unhappy with me. So the Azure PowerShell scripts like to have a little context object that wraps up this account name and the account key. So I'm going to go and make one of those right here. So my context is equal to new Azure storage context. Not container, context. Oops. And then you pass into that account name again and that storage account key, which I just happened to have copied to the clipboard already.
Okay.
So that stores that context into that object. And now I can call other APIs in PowerShell that will use that and authenticate automatically. So the one that I want to do is actually go create a share inside this account. So this one is very similar, new Azure storage share. Oops. And it takes the name of the share first, and we'll just use test because that's very descriptive for what we're doing here. And then you have to pass in that context again. CTX. And that will go out, and wow, that was really fast. So that created the share out there. So now I have a file endpoint, HTTPS, andredcc.file.core.windows.net, and then the share name just goes right after that, so slash share. And I can actually go connect to that now, because I happen to be, my dev VM happens to be sitting in the same data center as a storage account, so I can just do net use. And it's, you just turn the slashes the other way, because you're using SMB. And type all this in, and spell Windows correctly. And then test. Now I need to authenticate to the share as well. And so one of the things that's required for authentication is a username. And the username happens to be the same as your storage account name that you should connect with. So the first URL that you type in actually gets translated to an IP address, and so we don't ever see that coming over. So you have to tell us twice what the account name is. And then I'm just going to use that same storage account key as the password. Just paste that in right there afterward, and it failed. I typed something wrong. It's always interesting. I'm worried that this... I'm going to go back up and I'm going to try that other second storage account key. I'm worried that one has some sort of incompatibility here. Or I typed something wrong. This is those cases where you wish you had a... the second one worked. So
it
I'm worried...
might have been the forward slash or something.
I'm not sure what exactly happened in that one, but let's just assume. Yeah. I'll figure that one out later. Yeah. So now I can go to this drive letter and actually go do dir, and there's actually nothing here, which is what you would expect on a new empty file share. Yeah. But I'm going to put a file in here just for fun. So we're going to run Notepad on a file called test.php.
Okay.
And it's going to open it up and say, do you want to create it? And since it's a file share, I can just use whatever utility I want to type files in here. But since I'm doing this little demo, I'm going to just stick some random characters in here that are very important. So we're going to make a little PHP script, if I could get my question mark right. And we're going to put a function inside of here that says do test. And do test will echo some stuff. Echo Azure files. And let's go ahead and one of the other things that's interesting is if you do get this code called, is you want to know which machine, like which VM later that it actually is calling it coming from.
Okay.
So it it turns out on PHP that the username that the context is running in happens to contain the machine name as well.
Okay.
Get current user. I almost spelled that right. So we'll just print that out as well. And then end that. So that's a perfectly valid PHP file. So we'll save that. So that's now on my directory and my share, and it's just sitting there. And that's all I'm going to put there for now. Now I want to go create some VMs that can connect to this thing. So I'm going to go back to my C drive and create an Azure service project, which is how you create how you create like a VM or a set of VMs that are all running together through PowerShell. So I forget what that's called in the portal right now, but anyway.
A resource group?
No, it's
availability
a
set.
No, it's not even a set. It's actually just a project or a what's the name? Cloud service. It's just a cloud service on the portal. I'm going to use the same name, Android CC. It could be any name. It doesn't have to match the storage account name. I'm just trying to keep track of them by naming them the same thing. So you create a new service project, and PowerShell actually just goes and creates a directory in here and puts some files into it. And it's the standard CS, what are these called? CSDef and CSCFG, the configuration files and everything that you would need for a service. Interesting, this one doesn't have any roles in it yet, so it's a completely empty one. So we need to go add a role to it. And PowerShell, of course, can do that too, which is cool. But so I can do add Azure PHP website. I need to give it a name as well, so I can use like role one. And it, oh, I spelled that wrong or did something wrong. Web role, sorry, not website. Yeah. Okay, role one. So now I have a directory called role one here. And it has a PHP file, and it's like the default template one. I'm going to edit that in a second, but I want to make one more change to the configuration before I do that. In the cloud configuration file, there's a number of instances that you can have, and by default, it's one. And I'm just going to go change that to two so that we'll have two instances running instead of one when we deploy it in a few minutes. So now I can go edit the role one index PHP file. And this is, it by default creates this PHP file that just prints out a bunch of random information in a nice little formatted table, which is kind of cool when you first want to get started. Yeah. But I don't really want to use that for a demo. I actually want to put some code in here that's going to connect up to my file share.
Okay.
And so I'm going to write a little bit of code that that does that basically that net use command that I did on this machine and have it do it on the PHP machine as well. So. The first thing to do, though, you don't want this doing it every time that it runs. And so one way I found to check if that share is there is just to look for a file on it, and specifically the file that I put on the share. So we can just check and see if that one was there, which was just test.php.
Is Z drive the default that generally mounts to that?
I'm going to explicitly tell it what drive to mount it at. I could use any letter there. Okay. But I just happen to use Z because Z is so... The net use command always starts with Z and then works its way backwards. So
Zora starts with Z as well.
So does Zebra, Nick. So does Zebra.
So does Zoo.
And who knows what else starts with Z.
did you watch any of these shows before you agreed to come on?
No, I didn't watch any of these shows. I should have. Actually, I watched a few.
Yeah, they're generally informative but lighthearted.
Lighthearted. Okay, so I'm going to just go run a system command from PHP, which actually just runs, you know, whatever you want, and I can just type net use here and just tell it the drive letter Z. And then I'm just going to give the same path I did before, but I have to put in extra slashes because it's escaped. That's what I got wrong when I tried it the first time, is I didn't use enough slashes. But so it's again androidcc.file.core.windows.net. Double slash test, and then the same username trick, Android CC, and that same key. I'm just pasting the key right in here. Yeah. Don't do this for real. You should probably encrypt it and protect it and load it up dynamically, and so you can rotate it and do all those other things. But for a demo, it's fine. And then I'm also going to, I found this works best. It's prettiest if you make the output from this command not show up. So null in Windows is like this file that doesn't really exist, and everything can just, like a bitbucket, just disappears. So anyway, we'll write that out to there. And then I also want to actually call that file, that test file. So in PHP, it's just include that file name again, test.php. So that like loads up the script into this place, and then you have to call the function as well.
I think you missed a exclamation point or a bang right before the file exists, because that's going to reload the
You
drive.
Are absolutely right. What keen eyes you have.
Yeah.
So there we go. So now we have the code matching what I wrote down here. Mm-hmm. The good news, bad news, is this actually takes a little while to deploy. And so this is one of those cases where you kind of, you know, when you're a cooking show, yeah. you put the thing in the oven, then you have the other second oven where it was already cooking. So I'm going to go start the deployment, and then I'm going to show you what it looks like after it's been deployed. So. We need to publish this role first. So publish Azure Service Project, and it will just publish this current one that I'm working in. And then I have to remember to tell it what location to publish it in, because I want them in that same data center. So South Central US. And that goes off and starts a deployment. So it's actually going to go and create two VMs for me now and copy this. Zip up all these files that I put on this machine and then send them up to those and start a deployment and boot them up and then launch the PHP and blah, blah, blah. It's going to take a little while. Just spinning up the VM is going to take a few minutes. So thankfully, I already did this earlier today, actually yesterday. So I'm going to start up another PowerShell here. And on my Z drive, on this one, or Z, I happen to have an earlier run I did as well, where I ran this. I used Android SW because SW is the Southwest region or whatever. And on that file or in that directory, I have the same test.php file. And it has a little bit more. I typed the current user out, and I also printed the current date time. And so now if I bring up a web browser, let's see. And I connect to it, which was Android PHP. Oh, look at that, I already knew it. So boom, there it is, up and running. So
very cool.
There it is, and if I refresh this, since it prints that username out, if I refresh it enough times, it might pick the other front end, since there's two connections, but it actually isn't doing that for me today. Sometimes if I bring up another web browser, it works. But to show you that, to prove that these are connected, I can just go back to this share, because I'm on this dev box that's connected up to that, that share. I can go change this file. And instantly it changes.
All right. Fantastic.
So I can edit my settings or my website or whatever, because it's all stored in this file share. And all of the front ends that are connected to it just automatically will pick it up and run off of that. So
So this will work on a VM and cloud service, so web role, worker role, I'm guessing.
Web role, worker role, or virtual machine, a persistent virtual machine, yeah.
Okay.
It won't work in websites.
Okay.
Yet. Maybe someday.
If I just had a VNet set up or something like that, would I be able to mount it locally on prem?
Yeah. So
that,
VNets don't work yet either. Okay. They probably will at some point because it's an obvious extension. Okay. There's a lot. We picked with Azure Files. Mm. We sort of looked at the feature set, and there's all these different branches coming off of it. And we're like, okay, let's try to pick the core to get most of the functionality out there that people can use. And then we can work on around the edges, filling things in over time. So yeah, I would look forward. There's lots of features that everybody's looking forward to, but we've got a lot of them going already pretty well.
Yeah, no, so. I'm exceptionally happy that this
is this is one of those cases where it just opens the door to so many other things that we'll keep improving on over time. So.
Okay.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for coming on. This is really great stuff. I think people are going to be the same as Nick and be really excited to see what they can do with it.
Did you have more?
No, that's it. That was my demo. Yeah. Well, I was like, I could show. I'm tempted to go check and see if my deployment is finished, but I know that it hasn't yet because I can kind of see it in the background and it hasn't done its little thing. So it's not quite there. But anyway, in like 5 minutes or so, that new one would be up and it would look just the same as this one.
Excellent. And of course, all the stuff you did in PowerShell, people can use. Do using our SDKs as we have today, like if they want to write manage code to do this.
They can use
our Azure Storage.
SDK. You can use. I mean, I did a demo in PHP, but ironically, I didn't know much about PHP like a week ago, and somebody asked a question. Hey, can I use this from PHP? I'm like, probably. So I went and learned enough of PHP to get it going. Cool. But yeah, you can do it from a regular website if you're writing them in .NET or whatever as well, and you can set up the same connections and things like that.
Okay.
Great.
Excellent.
Do you have a Twitter handle we can point people to if they have questions? No, nothing like that?
So the great places are is the Azure Storage blog.
Okay.
We have a bunch of posts on there. In fact, I'm going to try to put this demo up pretty soon as well, just so that people can see how to do this sort of thing. And questions go on there is a great place for them. And there's lots of people other than just me watching them, which is awesome.
Perfect. Well, we'll make sure that link is at the bottom again.
Yeah. Okay.
Andrew, again, thanks for coming on. Really great stuff. Everybody out there, please make sure you follow us at the Cloud Cover Show and check us out on Facebook. And thank you for watching.
Thank you.